This week on Earn More Tutoring, I talk with author Brian P. Morin about his best-selling book, The 12-Week Year, how not all tasks are created equal, and how he reaches his goals for fatherhood.
Barbara was a retired real estate agent that came across the 12-week year after she retired. She thought, oh, this is going to be great because I can figure out what my, you know, what I'm doing with the rest of my life, right? What's the next thing for me? And right about time she started to apply the 12-week year, she found out she had terminal cancer. And Barbara had told us that, you know, one of the things that she couldn't think about 12 months out, but she said she could certainly plan 12 weeks out. And so she used the 12-week year to make the most of the time she had left.
Welcome to Earn More Tutoring. Our mission is to eradicate educator poverty. I'm Sean McCormick, the creator of the Becoming an Online Executive Function Specialist course. My guest today is Brian P. Morin. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Thanks for having me, Sean. Great to be here.
Yeah, so it's such an honor to have you on today. You know, I read your book. I was so inspired by it. Can you talk a little bit about your book and what inspired you to write the book?
So my business partner and co-author Michael Lennington and I were just working with clients on really what it takes to execute at a high level. We figured out pretty early that it's not what you know that counts, right? It's what gets implemented. And so we were working with the fundamentals of that. And so what happened was we were headed to a conference as a vendor, and we were thinking about what we were going to give away. And we decided to just write a short format book and document what we had been doing with our clients. And so the precursor to the 12-week year was a book we called Periodization, 12 Weeks to Breakthrough. And we went down to Kinko's and self-published 100 copies and took them to the conference, sold them for like 10 bucks a piece. And then from that, sold a couple hundred thousand copies of that book. It literally changed our business, changed our life. But the crazy thing was we wrote it in 12 weeks. And so it just made it that much more exciting and that much more impactful. But, you know, it was really documenting what we had done. So we knew it worked. It wasn't like we were a couple guys sitting in the basement trying to figure out, hey, what can we write about? You know, we just wrote about what we had been doing and the results it was getting.
Yeah. That's wow. It's like, it was just almost a tool to share with people, but it's like, sometimes it just makes me think, it's like, instead of trying to plan everything out and like make sure it's going to be a bestseller or whatever it is, you know, that you're just like, this is our value add, you bring it, and then it's impacting people. So could you just give people like kind of a short preview of what the 12-week year is? Cause of course I can talk about it all day, but I'd love to hear, you know, I'm sure you've mastered the elevator pitch of what the book is. So it'd be great to hear from you.
Well, at the 30,000 foot view, it's an execution system, right? As I already alluded, it's not enough to know, you got to implement. And so the 12-week year is the execution system. And it's a different way of thinking, which fosters a different way of acting and ultimately better results. And so our clients work in the context of every 12 weeks as a year. Because we found as we were applying the fundamentals that drive high performance, that drive high execution, we're doing in the context of an annual cycle, which is what everyone does, right? Annual plans, annual goals broken down quarterly and monthly. And no one had ever kind of challenged the notion of that. But what we found in that is there's just too much runway in that, too much time ahead of you. It's just so easy to put things off. And so we were looking for a way to change that mindset that says, oh, I got plenty of time. And that was we came across an athletic training concept called periodization, and that's what we adapted. So again, our clients work in the context of every 12 weeks as a year. There aren't four of those in the year. There's this 12-week year followed by the next, and it's all about just executing more effectively, not perfectly, but just more consistently.
Yeah. So I want to kind of testify to the power of the system, because I read your book. Let's see here. I probably read it in November of last year, so of 2021. And I had this vision for a long time that I wanted to turn my business. So I have a business, executive function specialist, and we have a process for helping middle, high school, and college students develop better organization skills. And it works, right? Our system works. It's been working. And I thought, I would love to turn this into a course. But it's like, you have the idea, but you don't actually act on it. But after I read your book, I just I was like, I'm going to have this course done in 12 weeks. I put a note, I put the date, and I like told someone else I was going to do it. I was taking from the weekly action plan that you talk about and kind of like getting other people to hold me accountable. And I just did it. And I'm so glad that I did it. Like, I don't think I would have done it if I had put it, I'm going to do it in 2022, because I think that's one of the key concepts in the book, is that if you plan something out in a year's time, you just avoid it, right? You get to, and you're like, okay, I'll do this in November. And then November hits, you're like, oh, I got to buy all my gifts or whatever. You know, there's all types of things that come up. So it's really powerful. And I guess it actually goes to the fact that someone else told me about it, right? I heard someone speaking about how they had been able to do certain things. And I was like, wow, like what inspired you to think that way? And they mentioned your book. I'm curious, Brian, like what's been the most, you know, I'm sure you see it all the time, like these transformations, and I'm not the first person to say, oh, your book had an impact on my life. What have been some surprising transformations or changes you've seen when people start to apply the 12-week year to their own life?
It's nothing short of amazing. I mean, what you just talked about, right? Had you set that as a 2022 goal, you know, would you have ever gotten it done? And how much more do you get out of it now that you have it for the entire calendar year, you know? And so we get stories every week, and that's why we do what we do. But some of the ones that I think are most impactful for me is the ones where, you know, it's had an impact in their personal life in some form or fashion. Like there's the financial advisor who wrote us and said, you know, most financial advisors, their biggest 2 months of the year are like November, December, right? And their whole year hinges on those 2 months. Well, this guy wrote us that he adopted, I think it was a boy or girl. Anyways, adopted a baby in early November, and he was able to take the entire month of November and December off to be with his wife and the new baby because he had been using the 12-week year, and it just had phenomenal 12-week year after 12-week year after 12-week year. So the annual stuff took care of itself. But that was incredibly rewarding. The other one that stands out is, actually you mentioned Barbara in our new book, Uncommon Accountability. Barbara was a retired real estate agent that came across the 12-week year after she retired. She thought, oh, this is going to be great because I can figure out what my, you know, what I'm doing with the rest of my life, right? What's the next thing for me? And right about time she started to apply the 12-week year, she found out she had terminal cancer. And Barbara had told us that, you know, one of the things that she couldn't think about 12 months out, but she said she could certainly plan 12 weeks out. And so she used the 12-week year to make the most of the time she had left, which was really amazing. I mean, just incredible.
Yeah, that's really powerful. I think it is a hope-giving process in the sense that when you think in 12 weeks, it's far enough out where you're like, okay, I have time to do something great, but it's also not so far that you put it off. I think that's the special thing about it, is it compresses time, and time is our greatest asset, as we all know. And so, yeah, thinking, basically changing the way you're thinking, because it's I guess in my mind, it's less about the system and more about changing your cognitive process. I'm wondering for you, how did you, you know, I know the conference inspired you to write the book, but what were you doing before this? Like, were you teaching, you know, workshops around this concept until it formalized itself in a book, or what kind of led you into crystallizing this knowledge into a book?
Yeah, we had built it into a system before we ever wrote the book. You know, we had figured out the disciplines and principles that drive high performance, figured out the context of the 12-week year, and had been working with clients on that, you know. And so when you talk about stories, I mean, we have thousands and thousands of stories where people have increased their income, you know, threefold, fourfold, tenfold, which you talk about changing someone's life, right? That can change multiple generations. And so, but it came about because we had kind of figured out the system first. And then we just, as I said, we wrote about it. So we were doing the consulting work and the training long before we ever wrote the book.
Got it. So you had really perfected it. And then the book was just kind of a byproduct of really making the changes in people's lives. For people out there who have specialized skills and systems that they've developed to provide transformational change for their clients, how do you recommend they go about you know, getting in front of their ideal clients. Like, it sounds like you were able to really effectively, you know, plant yourself in front of people who wanted this information. How did you do that?
Well, we had been working, we decided we were going to focus on financial services as a niche for us because the advisors are 1090 and they're self-employed, right? They kind of eat what they kill. And so in an environment like that, we can measure the impact pretty easily. And we were able to understand the industry and we were able to demonstrate a significant impact. And from there, it really expanded to every other industry because those guys, their clients, they gave our book out to their clients, which worked in just, so we work in about every industry, but it really started with financial services. And so as we were looking at that niche, we liked the people in it, to a large degree, their values matched with ours. We figured out we could have an impact. We figured out that the people were vested in it because they were 1099. And so all of those things lined up nicely for us. And then we just started figuring out, okay, where do these people congregate? How do we get in front of them? And, you know, what's the best way to do that? And the book really helped with that. It was a way for us to get in front of them without physically being in front of them.
Yeah. I think that that's something that a lot of people in my audience are wondering, like, okay, you know, the audience that listens to this, they're wondering, how do we get in front of the people who want tutoring services and of what degree it might, you know, whether it's reading, math, executive function. How did you figure out where your dream clients were congregating? And then it sounds like the book was a great way to kind of share with them that you had a crystallized or, you know, a clear kind of like process for them to follow. But how did you identify that, you know? And then I know nowadays people are like using social media, Facebook, whatever, but what was your approach to it?
Well, whatever vehicle you use or format you use, the easiest way is just ask the people that are in it. So, you know, if you know anybody that's in that industry, you ask them, so, you know, what are the conferences? How do you congregate? Where do you meet peers and things like that? And so it was, for us, it was simply just asking the people in the industry, you know, if we wanted to find more of you, where would we find them?
Right. Yeah. That's an interesting thing because it's like, you know, you mentioned financial services, they're typically 1099. So they're independent, I guess, contractors.
Yep.
Yeah, right. So it's like, it's easy to ask them. I think, and you may not have an answer to this, but this is a question that comes up for people in my industry is, you know, typically tutors are serving a kid,
but
their parents are the client or the ones paying. So it's like figuring out, you know, and especially when it's a specialized, oh, let's say it's like a reading intervention or a math intervention, like finding, yeah. So I guess it's the important thing is what I'm hearing is you have to go to the parents who are struggling with it or need help with it, ask them where they go, you know, create community.
Yeah. And so if you're, you know, if your target market is parents with kids, I mean, that's pretty easy to figure out where those people are, right? They're at the kids' sporting events. They're at the schools. They're involved with the schools. They're in junior league. Right. I mean, you could identify them by zip code if you want certain income levels, but you know, what's your value prop that's going to attract them? And it's not always for the kid that's struggling. Right. I mean, a lot of the test preps, because I've coached some tutors, right? That test prep is huge in terms of as they're looking at what schools they might get into for college. I mean, that's massive. So is the grade point. And so, you know, it's not just about tutoring the ones that are struggling. It's getting the parents and students that want an edge as well. So it's all how you speak to, you know, your services and the value you bring. But you know, if you think about parents with kids, those are pretty easy to find.
You mentioned value proposition. Now, I kind of know what that is. I've worked on my value proposition, but I think a lot of educators aren't really aware of that. They more focus on themselves. They're like, hey, like I have a master's in this, or they're, you know, describing everything they have, and they focus less on their value proposition. Can you tell us a little bit about how you developed your value proposition and what someone who doesn't know much about that might do to develop that?
Yeah. So the value prop is simply what's the value you're bringing to the marketplace? Who are you serving and what's the value you bring in their eyes, not in your eyes? Because in your eyes, it might be that, you know, you graduated with honors. To them, it's what's the impact going to be on their kid, right? How's it going to improve their life? And so, you know, thinking about that and being able to articulate that is going to be beneficial once you get in front of that group. And whether it's on social media, whether it's with a flyer that you pass out at some meeting, or whether you get 5 or 10 minutes to introduce yourself in front of them, right? It all should be based on your value prop, right? What's the value you bring to them? How do you make their life better with your services?
And what are your thoughts on, you know, it's like, how do you make their life better with your services? I'm wondering what your thoughts are on, oftentimes I see before the value proposition, people typically will identify the problems, right? They'll say like, are you struggling with this and this and this? Well, do you want this, this, and this? I'm curious, you know, because I've gotten some pushback. It might just be specific to education, but when you focus on the problems first, people start to feel like, oh, it's too salesy or too marketing focused or whatever. I'm curious, like, how important do you think it is to identify the issues that are the clients are facing before you provide that value proposition? Like, and here's how I solve it.
Yeah. I mean, I would say who's saying it's too salesy? Is it the people buying it, or is the, you know what I mean? And so people have to understand that the problem that you solve, every service is a solution to a problem. And the bigger the problem, the more painful the problem, the more they're willing to pay for the solution. And so a lot of what you're talking about is making sure that people are aware of the problem. And some of them are, some of them aren't, but the ones that are, it just brings it more to the forefront. And so you can typically agitate that pretty quickly at the front end, and then talk about what you do that's different, that's differentiated from anybody else, right? How you solve that problem in a unique way. You know, so what are the challenges, right? What are the challenges what's it take to get into the best schools? Is your kid ready to qualify for the best schools? Because options, the more options you have, right, the better life is typically. And so that's just, you know, how do you agitate that issue or that problem? And then what solution do you have for it? That's just one way to go at it. But you're asking my opinion. I'm not a chief marketer guy, but you've got to start with what's the problem that you solve.
What changed about your work after you wrote the book and it started to sell hundreds of thousands of copies? Like you said, like what changed?
Well, we became more international for sure, more global, and then got opportunities into additional industries. You know, our business increased as well. The other thing that happened for us though is Michael and I are continual learners, so we're constantly learning from our clients and tightening up. You know, I would say that the fundamental system is no different than it was when we originally wrote, you know, the paperback version, the periodization book, but a lot of nuances on how you apply it and what works and what doesn't work that we've learned over the years along with that. So one of the things that's changed is, you know, it's just given us an opportunity to hone our value prop even tighter and deliver more value. This sounds pat myself on the back, but I think Michael and I are probably the leading experts in execution, what it takes to execute and implement. I mean, we've got, talk about 10,000 hours. We got way more than that around that topic. And so, you know, and that came about just because as our clients embraced the book, they wanted more training, they wanted more coaching around it. And so we've done that for a couple decades now.
How do you and Michael balance being a collaborative team, but also having your own value add? Like, it sounds like you collaborate very carefully, but you know, your website is brianpmoran.com, right? How do you guys balance? I'm sure opportunities are coming.
Yeah. So the reason we have that site separate is I'm kind of the face of the company. I do most of the public speaking. And so if you go to 12 Week Gear, you know, we're both on there. But, you know, one of the things that I love about Michael doesn't have a big ego. And so, you know, we play different roles in the company. I'm more of the face of the company. He does a little more behind the scenes to support it. And that's that works for us.
Brian, I'm wondering, like, what are the biggest challenges that come up? So like, let's say you get through, you write the book, and now you're trying to expand or, you know, share your message. What are some challenges you noticed that came up as you went through this process?
Well, one of the ones we've faced fairly recently is my background in consulting was, I moved into sales with the consulting firm I was with. And so we sold big projects. And so, you know, that's, I know how to sell to executives. And so that's initially what we did with the 12-week year. We'd go meet, you know, a senior executive in a big company, and we'd talk about what we could do, and they'd buy for their entire group, which is great. It's big ticket stuff. But when you get these corporate contracts, at least for us, they would last only a couple of years. And typically each year they'd go down, you know, it might be seven figures 1 year, it might be $500,000. The next year it might be 10 million the third year, which is, I mean, not millions, hundreds, thousands, right? So might be seven figures 1 year, $500,000 the next year, 10,000 the third year. Those are big cash flow swings. So we decided that we needed to learn and pivot a bit and learn how to market a little better to individuals. So rather than having a big financial service company sign up for all their people, I'd rather have, you know, 300 or 400 individual advisors working with me, because what happens in the corporations, at least our experience has been that, you know, someone comes in a couple of years later and then they throw out everything the other guy had. That happened to us. We were with a brokerage. We doubled their app count in 6 months. The national sales manager was all in. They got a new CEO and he didn't re-up. I mean, we literally transformed that company in 6 months. He didn't re-up. 18 months later, he was fired, but we were long gone. So we've pivoted. We still do some of that stuff, but our challenge has been learning how to market versus selling face-to-face and learning how to, you know, build some things for individuals, not just organizations.
How do you approach individuals? Do you have a team that does that? Do you, you know, message them on LinkedIn? I think a lot of people I know, they have a lot of value added, but they might not know how to approach, you know, an individual and say, hey, I have a system that can change your business. What has worked for you as far as approaching individuals?
Well, one of the things, if you look into marketing, again, I'm no marketer by any means, but you need some sort of lead generation item. And so in our book, for us, it's the Getting Started course. But if you read the book, you know where to start, go online, get the free Getting Started course. And so what that's done for us is people have come into our world, they've raised their hand and said, I want information. You know, they've given us their name and their email. And so now we're able to send them the Getting Started course, and we're able to talk to them about other things we have from there, whether it be online courses all the way up to one-on-one coaching. And so for your group, thinking about, you know, what is that, what's the freebie on the front end? It may be an assessment. It may be, you know, the five things you need to be doing right now if your kid's a, you know, a sophomore to get in the best schools or something like that, that people would find value in, that gets them into your world, right? Where they raise their hand and say, hey, yeah, I want some more information that you have.
Right. Yeah. That's a great, great thing to think about. I've heard it described as like a lead magnet,
right,
a freemium. Right. Yeah. And that seems to me to always be the hardest thing to figure out. I mean, it shouldn't be, right? You should, you know, but it's like, what do you give away for free that you'd probably usually charge for, you know? But I like that you've developed this course, which is great. I mean, it seems like even a book sometimes can be like a lead magnet.
A lot of people use a book as a lead magnet. Yeah. And some of them are just eBooks and they're, you know, they really are a marketing piece versus a complete value add. But yeah, I mean, anything like that, you know?
So I'm wondering, Brian, what tools have been essential for you to help you, you know, grow your business and reach this point where you're one of the, you know, leaders in execution globally? Like what tools have been essential for you to help you kind of manage all this and keep it afloat?
You know, we started with Zoom 2 or 3 years before the pandemic hit, which as we were coaching clients, we wanted something that, you know, was more face-to-face, and some of the other conference software was real clunky. And so Zoom worked really well for us, and it was great. You know, as we've gone through the pandemic, and I mean, we're on it now, right? So you're able to capture audio, but you're able to see people. And so that was a piece of technology that we latched on to really early that really had a big impact as we went through the pandemic, because there was no learning curve for our team. We had all been on it, and working remotely was pretty easy for our team. You know, so as you ask about tools, you know, I look at technology as a piece of that, right? The different pieces of technology. But there's no replacing getting together face to face in person. And so we still try and do that as a company. We've tried to do it all through the pandemic where people were comfortable doing that. But bringing people together, and I see that because I speak, right? We're doing a lot of organizations are back to doing some in-person events, and most people are just delighted to be, you know, out of their closet and out with some other people, because a lot of things happen like in the margin, if you will, right? You've got a session, but it's the conversations after and before and in between where a lot of good stuff gets created, relationships get developed. And so, you know, I think you've got to be careful that you don't rely too heavily on technology on the people side of the business, because it can be really impersonal too.
Brian, I'm wondering, how do you balance productivity, which you are clearly the master at, with time off or relaxing? Like, you know, I find that sometimes I get too productive to my own detriment. And I'm curious, like, how you find that balance between being productive and stepping away from goals. Like, I feel like I have to set goals to not be working on my goals almost at times.
I think the 12-week year is perfect for that, because it'll help you focus in a few areas. It'll help you identify what really drives it, because not all activities have the same payback, and there will always be more to do than you have time to do it. So really knowing what matters most, working on that stuff frees you up to do other things. And I guess part of it too for me is that my family is a big piece of my goals. You know, life isn't about work. Work helps enable a fulfilling life in a number of different ways. And so, you know, I look forward to the time I have off. I'm not a workaholic, never have been. That's why I typically don't office out of my house. Because when I'm done, I'm done. I don't bring it home. I don't do it at night. I don't, you know, and that's kind of a discipline that I just started. But it's the concept of being present in the moment, right? If I'm with family, let's be mentally where I am physically. Let's be with family. Let's dig into them. And you know, one of my goals as a father has been be the number one influence on my girls. And in order to do that, you've got to spend some quantity time, not just quality time. You got to spend hours with them where they open up and they start to tell you all the stuff that's on their heart. And so if you're busy working or you're distracted with emails or on the phone or something like that, you're never going to get there. You're never going to have that depth of the relationship. You're never going to have that kind of influence. And so in a sense, Sean, those are goals of mine, but they don't feel like work. You know, most of the time, kids are work, but most of the time there's a lot of joy in that. And I find a lot of joy in my work too, because I'm not overworked. I'm not burning out. I look forward to what I do. I love what I do. And I'm not doing it 80 hours a week. So I set those boundaries. I use the 12-week plan to guide what I'm going to work on and what gets done. And I don't care if all my emails get read or not, to be honest with you. As long as my plan's getting executed, I know I'm in good shape.
Yeah, well, that makes me think. I also have a daughter and then another daughter on the way. So I don't know how many girls you have, but so that's my new goal, to be it was like probably sitting in my heart and I never articulated, but to be the number one influence on my daughter's lives is an absolute goal of mine. And I like the way you phrase that. I wanted to ask, well, actually, let me ask you, how many daughters do you have?
Two. I'm just curious. Two. Okay. Yeah. My oldest just graduated Michigan State. We flew back last weekend. Over the weekend, yeah, she walked on Saturday. It was really great.
And wow, then congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. My youngest is a sophomore in high school. So
very cool. Do they use the 12-week year, or do they? I'm always curious.
Like, to some degree, by default, they do. Yeah. As a family, we kind of do. Yeah.
Yeah. That's something I wanted to ask. How does, you know, I know for me, my goal setting and process has evolved over time. I have noticed that the 12-week year is sticking more than most of the other systems, or it's definitely added on to the systems that I've developed for myself. What does a day for you look like, Brian? Like as far as, you know, implementing your goals? I know there's the WAP, the weekly action plan. And I'm curious like how you stay organized, focused on your goals and get things done. You know, what does a typical day look like?
So it's more routines around the week as well as the day. So, you know, Monday, we start Monday morning with a weekly accountability meeting for the leadership team. And we'll go through what happened last week and what we're intentional about this week. And then the rest of my week is really working the plan along with, you know, some of the day-to-day stuff that I have. But the weekly plan really drives what I do each week. It's how I win the week. It's where I start each day. It's how I build my week. I build my week around the stuff in that weekly plan. I'm kind of old school. I print it out. I like to see it. I like to write on it, put tick marks on it. So I build my weekly calendar around the stuff in there. And then I've got family obligations. I've got things I want to do, like working out and things like that. So, you know, I know typically most days, you know, how late I'm going to work. And when I get there, I'm done. Because again, there's always stuff that I could keep doing. And I could work another hour and another hour, but that type of work produces diminishing returns anyways. It's not, at that point, you know, the productivity is low, the quality of the work is not the best, and most of the stuff really doesn't matter at that point, what I'm working on.
I like the way Mike Michalowicz framed it. He said, like, productivity is a lie in the sense that if you're just doing stuff all day, it's not actually productive. It's when you do the things that are the top priorities that you've kind of stated in moments of, you know, calm and clarity. That's what actual productivity is, not just being busy all day.
Yeah, it's not just being busy, because you can be busy like the hamster on the wheel and not move the needle. And that's the way most people live their life. And then they don't have time for anything, right? They're overburdened in every area of their life, and they're burning out, and they're missing the fulfillment because they're not working on, you know, they're treating everything equal. Everything's not equal. Right. So in work, you're really doing two things. You're working on the things that drive the economic engine, the RGAs, and then you're building capacity for future. Those are the two things. All the other stuff is just busy work.
Yeah. Could you talk about building capacity for future a little bit, about what you meant by that?
Yeah. So whether it's installing new technology, whether it's hiring an assistant, whether it's building a new program, you just built a new program. And I don't know if it's an online program, but I love stuff you build it once and sell it a bazillion times, right? That's building capacity of future. You had to carve out time this 12 weeks to build that. But once it's built, it frees up time and drives revenue for you. It could be a new CRM that you're installing. It could be you hire an assistant. It could be you're hiring tutors and you're training tutors. Well, there's an investment in that tutoring, in that training of those tutors that isn't going to pay dividends when you're doing it, but it pays dividends once it's done, you know, for the length that they're with you.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's something I don't think I think that's a huge challenge for people, right? Is they're not considering the investment of building capacity for future.
Right. And if I'm hiring tutors, the first one I'm training, I'm documenting that because I want to build the training system, so I can replicate it, improve it, dial it in, right? That's building capacity for the future.
Brian, what are the most influential or some of the most influential kind of books or podcasts, things that have helped guide your work life, you know, and the things you've created?
Yeah, there's probably too many to mention. I mean, I'm spiritual based, so the Bible's huge for me. I'm in it every day. There's just wisdom in that. No matter who you are, there's great wisdom in that you can apply, because there's, you know, for me, it's truth with a capital T. And then, you know, I'm always reading, I'm always pulling things. My career got started in business because I started reading some books on business and leadership and began to apply it and found out it worked. And that's when I became a real student of leadership and what it takes to, you know, to perform at a high level. And so, again, I'm not looking to acquire knowledge for the sake of knowledge. I'm looking to acquire it so I can apply it in a way that has an impact for me. And so, you know, there's all kinds of stuff that has had an impact on me that way. You know, I'm going to date myself, but back in the day, I had the cassette programs. Nightingale Conant used to publish these, and I every month I'd buy a new one. And I'd in the windshield time, I'd be listening to these people talk about how to be more effective and then thinking about how to take that in and what am I going to apply from what I just heard? And then go and apply it and try it and what worked and what didn't work. So there, you know, there's nowadays too, with podcasts and everything, I think it's so much easier than it was before. I mean, there's so much free content like your podcast, right? That people can tune into and get value from, that is easy. It's easy. It's convenient.
Yeah. I really liked how you said you don't just read to read. I mean, I think it's good if you enjoy fiction, go for it, whoever, but when you're reading with a purpose, and I found that to be one of the most influential or the most important kind of changes to my reading approach is like, if I have a problem, I can go find a book that helps me solve that problem, right? And that's an amazing way to read with intention. And it's amazing just like what doors will open. And I'm the same way. I like to listen. So I use Audible and just like, I invest in Audible. Like I listen to so many books on there, but yeah, it's like listening, making, what I loved what you said there is, you know, you're taking those moments in the car. Maybe 90% of people just sit there and listen to the radio or whatever happens to be on the radio, but you were intentional about it. You chose to make the best of those commutes and it pays off, right? It pays dividends. That you were building future capacity right there.
Absolutely. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So Brian, I've got a few, we call this the hot seat. I've got a few random questions just so the audience can get to know you better. Okay. If we jump into that.
Sure.
What is your go-to dance move?
My go-to dance move? Oh, man. I don't know. You have to ask my kids that. They would probably know that.
All right. We'll have to go to them next
time. It's not the splits. I can tell you that.
There we go. What is one of your favorite smells?
Horses. I love horses. We have horses. We show horses. And I just, that whole... Not the horse manure. Horses smell different. If you've never had horses, you think horse manure. Horses have a smell, and it's just a great smell.
What is one of your favorite comfort foods?
Mac and cheese.
Yummy. With like bacon or just straight up?
No, I'm a purist, man. Don't put hot dogs or bacon or anything.
Nothing. Straight up.
Just straight up.
All right. What is your theme song?
Oh, that's interesting. I don't know. I don't know that I have one. You know, I'm big on music. I love a lot of different music. I do have a song that I come out on stage. So if you had to press me, it would be Bob O'Reilly from The Who, my favorite band.
All right.
That instrumental version. You look like you don't know what that song is, but
no, I know The Who. Well, I like what is that song by them? It's like, I can see for miles and miles.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll have to check out Bob O'Reilly though. That one doesn't come to the top of my mind.
Being European, I didn't know why they didn't write that. They could see for kilometers and kilometers. You know?
Right. Yeah. That's interesting. I should have never thought about that. Yeah. That I don't know. It doesn't have the same ring to it.
No, it doesn't.
And last one, who is one of your best friends and what do you love about them?
Well, you know, my business partner, Michael Lennington, is one of my best friends. And what I love about Mike, he's authentic, he's genuine, he's smart, he's wicked smart. And just, he's a good man. He's just a good man. He loves his wife, loves his children, here to make a difference in the world. And so, and another one is Dave Hall is one of my best friends. Great man, loves his family, right? Fun guy, funny guy. Probably has more dance moves than I have even. So those are two.
We'll have to find out which. I actually, as I asked that question, I was like, man, that's a tough question because I have a few best friends and I wouldn't want one best friend being like, oh, wait, you're not my best friend, even as an adult. You know,
and then, you know, my wife is probably my best friend. Because we've been together 37, 38 years. And so, you know, I mean, you got to be good friends to last that long. And we've done so many things together and looking forward to just doing a bunch more.
Well, Brian, I want to thank you so much for making time to speak with me today. I'm very, very grateful. I'm so inspired by your work. If you haven't read the book, people listening, go read The 12-Week Year. It will change your life if you let it. And Brian, if people want to follow up, learn more about your work, stay in tune with what you're doing, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, 12weekyear.com. is where you can find us, or uncommonaccountability.com, either one of those. 12weekyear.com has more stuff on it. The Uncommon Accountability site, that's a new book, has less on it. So probably 12weekyear.com. That's the digits, 12weekyear.com.
And before we go, could you give us a brief rundown of Uncommon Accountability? I'd love to kind of preview that for our audience.
Yeah. So what happened was, you know, there's a couple chapters in the 12-week year about accountability. And Sean, you know, from reading, we have a very different view. And so folks have asked us, boy, they'd like to hear more about that. And we had more to say about it. So, I think accountability is probably the most misunderstood concept in business and society, in that most people experience it as consequences, negative consequences. And that is not accountability. We talk about accountability as ownership based on free will choice. And when you understand what accountability is, it's probably the most empowering concept you have to live the life you want to live. And so there's a little bit of that in the 12-week year. There's a whole lot of it in Uncommon Accountability.
Thanks so much for listening to this show today. If you want to try a free module from my course, Becoming an Online Executive Function Specialist, check out the link in my bio. Please leave a review and rating and crush that subscribe button. Hope to see you soon.